Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is author DJ Remmel. DJ and I will be discussing about his latest book titled The Next President, How the Man Defines the Office. Good morning, DJ. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio. How are you doing this morning?
Better than I deserve, Johnny.
Good answer. It's exciting to have you on the show. I'm very excited about your book. The Next President is an awesome read. You're very thorough. The book was very well written, very entertaining, and full of great information. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Sure. I was born and raised in Tetonia, Idaho, a very small town. Population is less than 200, on the Idaho side of the Tetons.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I went to college at the University of Idaho, where I received a mechanical engineering degree. And I did take 2 years out in college to serve as a missionary overseas. I lived in Taiwan for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back and graduated, got married. I have 5 wonderful kids, 2 of which are adopted brothers from Taiwan, and we have been living in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for about 7 years.
That's fantastic. That sounds really wonderful. Were there anyone in your family that are really gung-ho into politics when you were growing up?
My eldest brother is very enthusiastic about politics and had an attempt to be the governor of Idaho.
Fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's a big move.
Yeah, it is.
So when did you find out you like to write?
Well, I found out I liked to write when I was a kid, a young author's competition I was in. I was always very good at the mechanics of writing.
Yeah.
And I soon found that, you know, I love to read, very avid reader. I'm 9 years younger than my next oldest brother, so in a way, I kind of grew up as an only child. I had to entertain myself a lot. So very enthusiastic reader, and that carried over into writing. And I've done a lot of writing personally throughout mm-hmm. my life. It's therapeutic for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it came to a point where, you know, I was doing the research on the presidents, which I have read about for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and I saw this book forming in my mind, and I thought mm-hmm. it'd be very helpful for others, and here we are with The Next President.
Well, it's a wonderful book. So what actually motivated you to write The Next President?
Well, as I had said, I've always been interested in the presidents. I love to talk about them. I love the history of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I found a lot of people were very uncomfortable with their knowledge base.
Right.
In regards to the U.S. presidents. And, you know, they always asked, so what books do you read to learn about this? And I'd list mm-hmm. off 6 or 7 excellent books. And realize that now you know about 6 or 7 presidents, and currently we're on number 44.
Right.
So the goal with the book was to make a very consolidated, thorough, non-intimidating, very accessible way for
right.
people to be introduced to all of the presidents. And even for those who know quite a bit about them, there's a lot of unique insights in this book that can be mm-hmm. useful.
Well, please give us a quick synopsis of the book.
Okay. So the book is a nonfiction, and it's historical, and it looks at how each of the presidents of the United States have contributed to the office. There's a small biography on each of them, which mm-hmm. includes, you know, the bulleted highlights,
right.
religion, their political background, you know, date of birth, et cetera. It also includes a little bit of family life. And
mm-hmm.
you don't always see that in these consolidated mm-hmm. versions. But I think it's very important, and I do have one example I'd like to share while
sure.
we're on the subject, is Franklin Pierce, our 14th president.
Mm-hmm.
Between his election and his inauguration, he was on a train with his wife and his last living child, a son.
Mm-hmm.
The train wrecked, and it decapitated the child in front of him. his wife went into severe depression. She earned the nickname the Shadow of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And Pierce was the first president who didn't swear an oath on the Bible in entering office.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of our less successful presidents. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's certainly some insight into how that may have contributed to his presidency and the mm-hmm. successfulness of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that little family blip on each of them. And then it goes into the main things that they focused on during their term, you know, their successes mm-hmm. and failures. But one of the most unique things about the book is that it's organized by groups of rank, according mm-hmm. to a Wall Street Journal poll done in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I feel that it offers a lot of insight to group the greats and the failures and the averages together so that we can see what makes the greats greats, you know, what makes mm-hmm. the less average. You know, we find those commonalities that help define those orders.
Right. I like your book because it gives me a snapshot of the biography of each president. And it reminded me, in reading your book, it reminded me about the show on TV, Biography, because that's mm-hmm. about the only time I could get information about specific
right.
people that I'm interested in. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And the way you designed the book and so forth, I believe that's where the engineering side of you come in, which is wonderful because it's charted out very nicely. It's very well laid out. And I like that very much as well.
Well, thank you. You know, there is a lot of information in here. It's, mm-hmm. it is consolidated. But one of the best feedbacks I've had from mm-hmm. from a person who has read the book,
mm-hmm.
They said, hey, I read your book. And I figured, well, if they're approaching me, obviously they must have thought it was okay. So I asked,
yeah.
But what did you think? And they said, well, you know, there's a lot of information in there.
Right.
And my response was, well, how well do you think you've retained it? Because that's really this is an informative book.
It right.
offers a lot of insights, but we leave a lot of the conclusions to the audience. You know, I believe
right.
the audience is very intelligent these days,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of get sick of people telling me what to think. So we focused on the facts.
Right.
And people
right.
can come up with their own conclusions. But this guy said, you know, I was watching, you had mentioned the biography
yeah.
thing. I believe that's on the History Channel. He said,
that's
I was
right.
watching a thing on the History Channel about the presidency of the United States, and I caught the very end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was after reading your book, and they had a quiz come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, how'd you do on the quiz? He said, I aced it. So to me, that's a very huge compliment.
Right.
You know, we're not just filling pages here, we're filling minds. It's a very approachable book. It's easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You can read it during errands, between mm-hmm. commercials, whatever your style, or you can read it all in one sitting, and it's
right.
just as memorable either way.
Right. How much research did you do for the book?
There was a lot of research. Of course, there's a lifetime of reading about the presidents that
mm-hmm.
helped bring me to this spot. But I had originally come up with the concept 5 years ago, just prior to the 2008 election. It was around Thanksgiving of 2007,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't pull it together fast enough at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent the next 3 or 4 years, you know, obviously not full-time, but
right.
researching and compiling information and filtering it down so that we could cut out a lot of the fluff. You know, it takes a lot
right.
to put a biography of all 44 presidents plus a few narrative chapters to help tie things together all in one book that's non-intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true. Can you explain the choice of using the particular layout for the book?
The backbone of the book is the Wall Street Journal ranking from 2005, which ranked every president from greatest to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like you had mentioned before, the analytical aspect of my training.
Mm-hmm.
I always think it's helpful to put groups together. You know, chronological tells us a lot, but there's a lot of chronological books out there about the presidents. By grouping these guys in rank, you know, I found
mm-hmm.
very interesting insights that connected the greats and the failures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a very large time of need for the country associated all of them.
Yeah.
Obviously, the separation was the greats did fantastic at it, and the failures didn't. But then you take the near greats,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, a lot of them were no less great than the three greats that are listed.
Right.
but their timing during office wasn't as critical for the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I just really like the way that allows for further insight from the reader by doing that.
And you're right about that, about the various presidents, whether they're listed as the greatest or the ones that are not so great and so forth, because you can have whatever platform you have to go into a particular race for that particular year with your agenda and so forth. But guess what? The world, in some ways, will dictate your agenda for the next 4 years.
Very much so. A case in point is George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
He had an aggressive agenda. Certainly with his father having been president, I'm sure it helped him out. Within the first 6 months,
right.
He had already done a lot towards his campaign goals, but then 9/11 happened, and that dictated the rest of his term.
Right, right. I mean, you basically just pull out a brand new white sheet of paper and go to work.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's quite fascinating from that perspective. And people don't realize that, because people feel like, well, you said you're going to do this and you didn't do this. Well, it's not quite as easy as you think it is.
Yeah. Well, and there are a few presidents that fit in that category. You know, nothing too unexpected came up. There was already this dichotomy that they had to deal with. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Were there plenty of surprises you uncovered in your research?
One of the most interesting facts I think I found, which is unique to this book, is I found a correlation between a president's personal wealth and his likely success in office. The correlation being, the wealthier president, the more likely he is to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a personal correlation,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it can only be found through the ranking groups.
Mm-hmm.
To expand on that, mm-hmm. the thing I love about America is it's just anybody has the possibility to become president of the United States. Our top three greats are Washington, Lincoln, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Washington was one of the richest, if not the richest, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
Depends on how you look at JFK's family estate.
Right.
Technically, he hadn't inherited any of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Washington, one of the wealthiest. Lincoln, one of the poorest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then FDR had an average wealth of his presidential peers. So in the top category, the three greats that we have, they also represent each of their peers' economic status. You have a wealthy, a poor, mm-hmm. and an average. And I just, that says so much to me about America. You know, greatness, true greatness can come from anywhere.
Right, right. It's just needing the chance, the opportunity to really showcase your leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah, very well put.
Does your opinion change about any president in the course of writing the book?
You know, I don't know if my opinion changed so much as my appreciation.
Okay.
A president who was not successful in office, you know, it's fairly black and white. They just weren't that good of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Franklin Pierce, for example, who we had just discussed,
is
one of our lesser successful presidents. But you take into the fact that he had a very tragic death in his family, losing his last child, decapitated in front of him, and virtually no support from his wife while in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can better understand some of the personal effects on why this guy, the trials that he went through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go back and take a look at Nixon. You know, Nixon, of course, wasn't a great president because of the Watergate scandal, but he had a lot going for him entering the presidency, a very intelligent man, but he let this paranoia overwhelm him, and deservedly so. You know, he is not that successful, but I certainly appreciate his background and his political knowledge better than before.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So what is your political party affiliation?
By nature, I'm conservative. I believe the smaller the government, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my opinion comes from Ezra Taft Benson, who was the Department of Agriculture back in the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah.
And he had written a document that he called The Proper Role of Government.
Mm-hmm.
And to sum it up, he basically says that the government shouldn't have any power than a personal right that is delegated to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses defense, for example.
Yeah.
A person has the right to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A family has the right to defend their home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in nature, so does a community, a state, and a nation.
Right.
But that is not something that an individual can carry out. Therefore,
right.
defense is a proper role of government that should be mm-hmm. carried out, you know, throughout each of those
sure.
Levels.
Mm-hmm.
He also uses another example. If a rancher has two horses
mm-hmm.
and his neighbor doesn't have any,
mm-hmm.
the rancher himself could give one of his horses to his neighbor out of
mm-hmm.
generosity. But it is not a proper role of government for the government to come in and take one of his horses to give to his neighbor,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
it's this general guideline that I have used to kind of dictate my political views.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say I'm necessarily a Democrat or Republican. You know, I focus on the person, I focus on the issues. But really, the person I feel that supports smaller government is typically the person I vote for.
Right. I understand. So was it intentional for the content to be factual, nonpartisan?
Yeah, I feel that the audience is very educated these days. And I know, especially during an election season,
mm-hmm.
a presidential election campaign, I get so tired of people telling me how to think. They're always putting their own spin on stuff.
Yeah,
and it just drains me. I don't want to hear anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want a book with the facts.
Right.
So that people can understand the history of the office.
Right.
And they can come up with their own conclusions.
Right. You hit something very important right there, because you talk about the history of the office. It is true that man runs the office, but the
mm-hmm.
office in itself, the Oval Office to me, it's an institution in itself, and it carries a
mm-hmm.
certain amount of respect, integrity, and it requires a certain amount of integrity, let me put it this way. And so as such, there's only a certain select few of men that is deserving to be in that position. What are your
mm-hmm.
thoughts?
I agree. And what was interesting to me is how the office has changed
mm-hmm.
throughout its history. You know, Washington, the first president, he
yeah.
initiated a lot of things that we just took on. You know, he set it out on a very good pace. But nothing screams America to the rest of the world like the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people often get confused about the power and the authority that he has,
mm-hmm.
You know, where Congress actually makes most of the decisions. But the president is supposed to be their leader. He's supposed to guide the nation. He's supposed to listen to the people. You know, his biggest asset is the voice of the American people behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting looking at the history how some have used that effectively and how others have looked at the position as more ceremonial.
Right.
So certainly it's a privilege and an honor to be in the presidency, and nobody who goes into the presidency leaves with their same integrity. It's a very open office, you know, it's scrutinized.
Yeah.
You right. never win.
Right.
Some have been more popular than others, but, you know, Lincoln, for example, as
mm-hmm.
great as he was, there were a lot of people that hated him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And history could go back, and historians can go back, and they can give a fair judgment, you know, saying that, you
right.
know, this is what the country needed. It's not a popularity contest, which sometimes we feel it is. You know, the most charismatic
right.
person will become elected, you know, as was the case with Harding for certain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is an honor and a privilege to be a part of that. But in a way, each American is a part of that presidency, because
mm-hmm.
it is our vote that helps guide who is elected and
mm-hmm.
how they lead the nation.
Mm-hmm. Things have changed since the beginning of the Republic, though, because back then you don't have the media coverage like you do now. Back then you don't have that sort of influence as you would right now in terms of the
mm-hmm.
different special interest groups and so forth. So, and then not only that, the change that people doesn't fully grasp is that whether we like it or not, we are a sum total of the world in some ways. We have always been that way, but we've been isolated in some way. Not by design, it's just the nature of the beast, because at that time everybody is minding their own business, so to speak.
Yeah, well, survival was a much larger part of life back then.
Precisely.
It's certainly a lot harder than just going to the grocery store.
Right, and so now the dynamics change, because there are a lot of things that are happening today that the president himself as an individual can't do a whole lot, or even Congress can't do a whole lot, because it's predicated on the effects of things happening globally.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I see, on the other hand, is that we're trying to sort of take something in the 1800s or 1900s and trying to shove it in and make it work in the 21st century. Sometimes that don't work, and people don't realize that.
It's very true. But I would say I don't think the principles mm-hmm. of what our duties and responsibilities are have ever changed. But
right.
certainly with the the information and as easily transferred as it is,
right.
I was listening to a conversation yesterday about
mm-hmm.
Syria
right.
and how the rebels are saying, why isn't America coming in and helping with us
right.
at this point? And you put that in your context where,
right.
200 years ago, we would just barely be getting news of that.
Right.
Right. And to Syria, we've already given up on them.
Right.
So very,
right.
very different dynamics, absolutely.
Right. And not only that, if we were to be involved some 200 years ago, we'd be the player. That's it. In a conversation.
Yeah.
And
Absolutely.
Now it's not so simple. Life is not
yeah.
so simple as it is right now. And people
yeah.
fail to understand that, because it's not necessarily you bringing the biggest stick to the fight that's going to win the deal.
mm-hmm.
And we have
right.
proven, and we have actually proven that in so many ways. And so people don't realize that, because it's a little bit more complex. I'm not saying there are no solutions to it, but it's going to be a little bit more complex. There's a little bit more diplomacy and everything else is involved. And sometimes, of course, patience is our greatest enemy in some ways.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So who is your favorite president and why?
I have always been fond of Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that, salt of the earth, he never had much. It was always, to me, his purest intention was for the country. He really had no personal ambitions that I could see.
Right.
There's a quote of his that has always stuck out to me, and
mm-hmm.
he said, "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master."
Yeah.
This expresses my idea of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
A man who led by values and principles,
right,
and ultimately gave his life for it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it doesn't become much more inspiring than that. And I know there are those out there who would argue, what he started with the trampling of states' rights and where it
right,
goes today.
Right, right.
But to me, it's always been a bigger issue than that.
Right.
It's always been about civil rights. And I'll steal a quote from Jimmy Carter. He said,
mm-hmm.
America did not invent human rights.
Right.
In a very real sense, human rights invented America.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's, we've gone through our progression to become more fair. And, that's always been our goal, and I can never fault America or Americans for that.
Right. You brought up Lincoln. What's interesting about him is that, it is my understanding when I was learning history, well, he really did not go out there and seek the office. His compadres were maneuvering things and got him in there.
Yeah.
to run for the presidency, because I can't think of anyone, especially nowadays when you think about it, making the announcement way ahead of time and telling you that I want to be the president of the United States in 4 years.
That's right. He's probably the closest. I would give him and Truman and maybe
yeah.
Ford, the
yeah.
three of those, probably had the least political ambitions out of anybody since Washington.
Right.
And to me, that says a lot.
Yeah, yeah. To me, that would be that sort of an average person who has a passion for the family,
mm-hmm.
for the country, and the rights of human being and so forth. And
yeah.
now you're thrusted into an opportunity, a position to make everything right.
Yeah. It helps eliminate the personal agendas.
Right.
Which we do see when we go back, we see a lot of presidents who really want to be in the office just because that's the spot to be in.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
According to your book, George W. Bush is ranked higher than his father. How did that happen?
Well, the poll, the Wall Street Journal poll is from 2005. And right. At the time, George W. Bush was entering his second term in office. In academia, they always want to try and be fair. So they go out and they poll conservatives and they poll liberals and everybody in between. And what happened is half of the people that polled thought that George W. Bush was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And the other half thought he was the worst thing ever. And what that resulted in was an average rating. And it just so happened that that put him above his father. Now, will that rating change as, polls continue in the future?
Right.
Absolutely. It is a very nondescript way to look at a president. And for that reason, Obama, though his biography is included in this book, he is not included in the ranking system because we see similar polarizations in his term as well.
But also,
Bush's results may not change that much either. Their last three former presidents, including Bush, his father, and Clinton, were all ranked average.
Right. George W. Bush came out ahead of even Bill Clinton. That was interesting.
He did. He did. And it was kind of a crapshoot on that, just because he was in term, politics. That's the best way to put it.
Who was the most intelligent president?
The most intelligent. There were certainly a lot of them that could be considered very intelligent, but the most intelligent, I would say, hands down, was Jefferson. A true Renaissance man, started studying everything at the age of five, grew to learn five languages, had a massive library, but not only factual intelligence, you could find that in an idiot savant, somebody who knows everything but can't apply it or can't relate to people.
Right.
So in psychology, they have this term, which most people are familiar with now, but it's emotional intelligence.
Right.
And that's a person who can use his knowledge and articulate that and talk with others. He can interact with people. Jefferson had this amazing ability to present his case, the facts, his ideas, and convey them to others so that they would buy into it. Of course, with Adams, they were just on separate ends of the political spectrum. And, it wasn't a matter of convincing. It was core principles at that point. but they ended up dying best friends. So Jefferson was very articulate, very intelligent. A really neat story about him, John F. Kennedy was in the White House, and he had a group of Nobel laureates in there with him. And I do have to paraphrase a little bit, but he said, "I think this is the most extraordinary collection of talent, of human knowledge that has ever been gathered together at the White House, with the possible exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone."
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you heard of this, but today I just heard on the radio that the Libertarian candidate, I believe he's from Kansas, if I'm not mistaken, has changed his name, legally changed his name to Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, I did not know that.
I believe that you wanted
to change your name. That's a good one to go to. I know a gentleman in Idaho. When my brother was running for governor, there was another gentleman who was running for governor as well, but he had actually changed his name. Now that I bring it up, I'm forgetting what exactly it was. Pro-choice, I think, is what his legal name was.
Really?
It was obviously a single agenda man running for office, but
right,
it's funny.
Right. You also left out a couple of presidents from the book. Who are they, and why did you leave them out?
Yeah, but to specify that they are in the book with their biographies, but they were not included in the ranking system.
Right.
And there's three of them. We already talked about Obama because it's just not fair to judge a person while he's in the middle of creating his legacy.
Right.
But the other two, William Henry Harrison and James Garfield, and the reason they weren't included in the ranking system is because they were presidents for such a short time.
Mm-hmm.
They really didn't do anything. There's nothing to judge them by.
Mm-hmm.
William Henry Harrison, our first president to die in office,
mm-hmm.
He was a Whig candidate and the first Whig president, and mm-hmm. he spent over an hour and a half laying out the political platform for the Whigs during his inauguration. He was an older gentleman, and he happened to be out in the rain without a top coat or hat,
mm-hmm.
or a top hat or coat, I meant. And mm-hmm. he caught pneumonia and died 1 month later. Shortest tenure in presidential history.
Mm-hmm.
James Garfield was also, he was shot 4 months into his presidency. That took quite a while for him to die. It wasn't actually the gunshot that killed him. It was the doctor's dirty hands and stuff that created mm-hmm. massive infection, went septic. He really died a very painful death. But obviously from his bullet wound until his mm-hmm. death, he didn't do anything. So mm-hmm. he is also excluded from the ranking system.
Mm-hmm. Which president is overrated?
Overrated, and this is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I had mentioned that our three greats, and they're commonly in the top three. Sometimes their order changes a little bit, but Washington, Lincoln, and FDR.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that FDR is overrated.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
He trying to think of how to articulate this.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who's in office, he's in his fourth term, and he finally passes away. And if it wasn't for that, it would be my guess that he may even still be president. He loved the spotlight. He loved being in that role.
Right.
He's probably the closest president we've ever had to the king mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And though he did help bring the country out of the Great Depression, certainly was influential. And a lot mm-hmm. of times that's what these polls are, is more influential necessarily mm-hmm. than successful, because it's tough. We do have political ideologies out there. But, you know, a lot of the programs that he implemented, I just don't agree with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we've had such mission creep. But Social Security, for example, mm-hmm. when it was initiated, was a volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't use that money for the, for the open pocketbook of the government.
Right.
And all that's changed over time. And, I can kind of understand how they initiated it. Is it really the role of government to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Not my opinion. So
mm-hmm.
For that reason, I think FDR is overrated.
Mm-hmm. I look at it that he has the idea for the masses to help others, because sometimes, by nature, men tend to be selfish, and is out of survival mm-hmm. instincts, to whereby sometimes when men fail to act, coming back to the example that you gave earlier, where it's certainly great if the neighbor decides to loan or give away
mm-hmm.
a livestock, a horse in this case, to the neighbor that needed it. However,
mm-hmm.
by nature, sometimes the neighbor may not want to do that because of the short-sightedness of things.
Okay. It's true.
Yeah. And so you need some sort of a governing deal to come in and say, you know what, you have to share. Because in the end, you're not looking beyond today, and that's your problem. So my goal is to make you see the benefit of this tomorrow, the
mm-hmm.
next week, and the week after. Now, to the extent I agree with you, there may be a need to have some sort of a sunset rule for everything that we do in life as well.
Yes. Yeah, very well put. I read a research article, and it was talking
mm-hmm.
about the charitability of, the willingness of people to help out.
Mm-hmm.
And what it looked at, and I have a brother-in-law who's a fireman in Tacoma, Washington, and he gave an example that was similar to this.
Yeah.
Basically, when an individual thinks that there is a governing body or a group of people
mm-hmm.
That will help somebody out,
yeah,
they typically don't stop themselves. They may call it in,
yeah.
but their personal need to help out is overridden by this thought that somebody else will take care of it.
Right.
So there's certainly, where's the balance? Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly understand and appreciate your point.
Yeah.
What's the magic answer? It's hard to say. I think we're all still trying to figure that out. Which
it's very difficult.
One of the reasons why we're in this life, you know?
Right. But too far to the right is bad. Too far to the left is bad.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so in the end, it is the middle road, and it's a tough choice. He's trying to keep the ball in the middle, in the playing field.
It is. Well, and that middle road always seems to change. Just the minute you think you've got it right, you know, some other factor gets introduced, and you have to start all over.
Right. Oh, and that's where the situation is fluid. And I think that's, in the end, it comes back to what you mentioned about there are certain basic individuals that have attained the presidency of the United States that govern everyone else and lead everyone else from the perspective of core values. And if we have that, then that's the commonality. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. With core principles, we can never go wrong. A quote by one of the presidents, I just forgot his name, but he said, you know, our agreements are principles and our disagreements are policies.
Mm-hmm.
No, and that's really the approach that I think everybody should take.
Yeah, and it levels the playing field, because is it level all the time? No, you can get it to as near level as you could.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the approach that, you know, that I think that people need to take. You have several presidents. You have several presidents that receive a failing grade. Who are they, and why are they rated that way?
Oh, yeah. Five presidents that are considered failures in their presidencies. Four of them are associated with the Civil War. And one of them, Warren G. Harding, our 29th president, was not. Harding was following up after World War One, won by a landslide, very charismatic, the first election in the nation where women were allowed to vote. The women absolutely loved him. He brought Hollywood stars in. He really changed the way campaigns were run. Once in office, he had this make no enemies policy, and what it kind of turned into was make no decisions policy.
Yeah.
That on top of the fact that he really kind of looked at the presidency as ceremonial. His presidency was an absolute horror. And you know, it kind of goes back to those kind that we were talking about before. He wanted to be in the limelight.
Yeah.
But he certainly did not understand any of the responsibility associated with the president of the United States. So you have him on the outlaying end, and then you have the three presidents leading up to Lincoln, 13th, 14th, and 15th, Millard Fillmore, Franklin Pierce, and James Buchanan. And then you have Andrew Johnson, who was Lincoln's vice president at his assassination, who became our 17th president. And, you know, there were a lot of issues involved with all of these guys. Fillmore, he allowed his entire cabinet to leave and replaced them. This was William Henry Harrison's vice president, the Whig candidate, and you know, Fillmore just did a deplorable job of regrouping upon that death and restoring the politics associated, you know, with the presidency. Franklin Pierce, you know, slavery and the expansion west were his two critical components. He could have been very successful, but he wasn't. He did not address them well. James Buchanan, his whole presidency was just kind of a disaster. But the worst thing, and this probably alone qualifies him for being the biggest failure of a president, is that he allowed the states to secede. And this was between Lincoln's between his election and his inauguration. So Lincoln is president, but doesn't have the power of the office yet. And he's watching Buchanan let these states just lead everybody into civil war. You know, there are some arguments. You know, was it constitutional to stop them from leaving? No. You know, but without getting into the details of it, certainly Buchanan could have done better by a long shot. And then Andrew Johnson, the post-Civil War, you know, it was his duty to bring everybody back together, to unite us as one nation. And he didn't do a very good job. Alcoholism was rampant in his life. These are the presidents that have left a very large impact on U.S. history, but in a negative way.
Who is the most underrated president?
Typically, the most underrated president is Polk. This is a very intelligent person. He had no life. He had no friends, no hobbies. Politics was everything to him. Mm-hmm. He went in. In fact, his opponents during the campaign, his opponents' kind of election tagline was "Who is Polk?"
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of came from nowhere. He wasn't real charismatic, but very, very politically gifted. He had some campaign promises, very defined goals. He won the election. He did what he said he was going to do, and he ended it at one term, which was one of his campaign promises. He said, "I'm going to go in for 4 years, I'm going to do these things, and then I'm going to leave." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So he is often termed the least known consequential president. Most often he's the one that's overlooked. Now, I was pleased to see in the Wall Street Journal ranking from 2005 that he did make it into the near grades, though he was at the bottom end of the list.
Yeah.
It pleased me to see that he was recognized.
That's good, as you mentioned, because nowadays, if you're not in there long enough, you're forgotten.
Absolutely. You know, unless it's like Nixon where you're kicked out, you know, and then remember that forever. Yeah,
right.
Joe Paterno, I need to bring this up just because he's been such a highlight since the verdict
scandal. Yeah.
You know, a person who had a phenomenal football career, and they are now taking down his statue. They're removing, I think, 14 years worth of victories.
Right.
And he will forever be known as the person who, you know, overlooked or didn't do anything about the sexual scandals.
Right. That will be his legacy, unfortunately.
It is. I told my kids, I said, you know, it's not enough in the world today to just stand by and not participate. Just because something happened and you didn't do it, it's not enough. You know, the world needs heroes. It needs people to step up and make the right choices. You have to stop the bad activities. And unfortunately with Paterno, you know, he didn't make that choice. There were large consequences that come from it, as well as, you know, go back to Nixon. You know, Spiro Agnew had left, tax evasion, and then Watergate became a huge deal. And everything that was good in Nixon's presidency has been forgotten.
Right. We, as the common citizen, face that choice also. Every moment is a conscious choice.
It is.
We have to make a decision.
And even by not doing something, you're making a decision. There's always three answers. Yes,
right.
No, and I'm not going to decide. Well, by not deciding, you're making a decision.
That's correct. That's correct. And it's a very tough deal because in the absence of taking the leadership of making a choice, like even in Joe Paterno's case, well, then what you have is every action or inaction that you do has consequences.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And we all have to live with that. And sometimes people don't realize that because they expect things for people to have better understanding about life and so forth. And this is where it's a very difficult scenario because you're looking at, okay, some people in the government look at it this way. Because of your inability to act, we need to act on your behalf as best as we could. Well, that's good. And fine and dandy. And then, like you say, at what point is it above and beyond the necessity boundaries, so to speak?
Yeah. And that's never an easy question to answer.
Right. What are some of the quotes that made the various presidents their legacies?
I got to tell you, I love the presidential quotes.
Mm-hmm. I love it, too.
They're just fascinating. Yeah. Of course, John F. Kennedy, everybody knows, you know, ask not what your country can do for you. I try to do an accent, but it's horrible. But what you can do for your country, you know, and that's followed him forever. Yeah, John Adams, our second president, ranked number 13. He's one of the near grades. In politics, the middle way is none at all.
Yeah.
You know, and that really, though it may be a lesser known quote of his, it really defined his approach to politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and his success in the office.
Mm-hmm.
His son, John Quincy Adams, our sixth president, ranked number 25. Mm-hmm. Not that great. Duty is ours, results are God's. You know, kind of a...
Right.
Though it may be an appropriate quote, it's kind of a passive nature to his approach. You know, and so I think that represents the legacy that he created.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had already mentioned Lincoln. I always come back to this, you know, as I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master.
Right, right.
You know, it, regardless of all the politics involved, if you take that principle, there really were no other choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good quote by Grant, he said, "My failures have been errors of judgment, not of intent." Of course, this is post-presidency. You know, Grant was ranked number 29th. He had a lot of issues, a lot of scandal in his cabinet. You know, and then the last one I'd like to share on this portion of it, you know, Nixon, who we've discussed quite a bit, he ended up being ranked 32 out of. So I need to preface this. Obama is our 44th president, but Stephen Grover Cleveland was elected to two non-consecutive terms, so he's our 22nd and 24th president. So really, we've only had 43 people occupy the White House, and three of them we haven't included in this ranking: Obama, Harrison, and Garfield. So, you know, to rank 32 out of 40, not so great. And we already have mentioned the five failures and their contributions.
Right.
So you take Nixon ranked number 32. Even though he had a reasonable start to his term, you know, the Watergate scandal and everything else, he was associating with a bad crowd. But he said, "A man is not finished when he is defeated; he is finished when he quits."
Right.
And this is coming from a guy who resigned the office just prior to his imminent impeachment.
Right. 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 That's very true. The favorite one for me is from John Quincy Adams. In terms of leadership, if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. It's basic common sense.
Yeah, excellent quote. I'm glad you brought that up.
And one that is basically, to me, is timeless, and this is interesting, is from Thomas Jefferson. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies.
it's true. You know, Washington was not affiliated with any party, but you had Hamilton in the background, who was starting this Federalist movement, and they were all for a central bank.
Yeah.
Adams was Federalist. And at the time, the person who got the most votes in a presidential election became president. The person that got the second most became vice president.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson created the Democratic Republican Party in direct opposition of the Federalists. So he was, in fact, running against Adams during that second election. Adams won. Thomas Jefferson became vice president. They hated each other. They couldn't see eye to eye on anything. And so eventually, you know, Thomas Jefferson becomes elected, still adamantly against banking.
Right.
And in historical irony, Jefferson is on our $20 bill.
And, well, when I read that quote, it just reminded me with all the chaos that we've been having the last several years.
Up
to this year with the LIBOR issue, with all these things. And that's where the greed comes in. It's just sad.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. And that's where sometimes you got to come up with an answer from the standpoint, okay, if man fails to act, then an institution, a body, a government has to act on man's behalf. So it's it's a difficult
very
thing.
Very true. Yeah. It is.
What would you like for your readers to gain from reading your book?
Well, I've always been with the philosophy that we can learn more about our future by studying our past. And the way this book is presented, it's very factual. You know, there's not a lot of politics in there. This is a history book. It does talk a little bit about our, you know, how the current political system works. What I would really like readers to see in this is to better understand who they're looking for, what qualities they're looking for in the next president. So many times the issues get made emotional.
Yeah.
A good example of this is that horrific tragedy that just occurred in Aurora, Colorado with the shooting.
Right.
And instantly you see sides from, you know, factions from both sides that approach and try and spin the emotions on that into their own political agendas.
Right, right.
And that's an extreme example. But it goes back to the economy. It goes back to immigration. We see it permeated throughout these presidential campaigns.
Right.
And what I would really hope is that a person can help decide what their principles are, what qualities in a leader can help, you know, move us closer towards those,
right,
and, you know, help set the emotions aside for a little bit.
Right. Well, you can be emotionally driven, but you got to make sure there is not a single agenda deal that you're pursuing, because then in the end, we can live in this world on a single agenda. I don't care what it is.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Work. Yeah, it just doesn't work because it is the balancing act of a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and that balancing act, it constantly changes, and that's why we have to continually work at it.
Right. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
The easiest way is to go to my website, which is djrammel.com. It's spelled DeeJRammell. We've got links up there to the publisher's website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. We make it really easy for you. If you do want to go down to your local bookstore, your favorite cubby, the book was just released, so if it's not on their shelf, the warehouses do have it. Simple request, and they should have it for you right away.
Let's talk a little bit about the making of a president of the United States. There are requirements, obviously, because that's a big thing in this recent election, and, of course, it's about to be a big thing in some ways in this upcoming election. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
Tell us, what are the requirements?
Well, the requirements are very simple, and they're stated right in the Constitution. There are three requirements. A person has to be a natural-born U.S. citizen. They must be over 35 years of age. And they have to have lived within the United States for the previous 14 consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in addition to that, there are some, what's the term, some requirements that can disqualify a person.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these came about after the Civil War. Basically, if you've spoken openly in anarchy against the United States, then you're not qualified, but a special vote in Congress can help pass that. There were a couple others that were along that same kind of concept, but I can't remember them specifically right now.
How has writing the book impacted you personally?
Well, certainly I've gained a lot of insight. You know, it's always interesting to read in great detail about a certain person, especially the presidents of the United States. And there's a lot of information out there. You know, Washington, Lincoln, Roosevelt, Jefferson, you know, readily accessible.
Yeah.
What I really liked when I was writing this book is the insight that I got through the structure by ranks, and then also better understanding the lesser-known presidents. Those who we don't often hear about, who lived no less of an important life and had just as an interesting approach to the presidency as any of their peers. And that appreciation has certainly helped me focus on the qualities of a president. You know, those traits that you long for, that you can connect with. And to understand that, you know, these people aren't just puppets. They're not just a face.
Right.
They had personal lives, too. They had struggles. Some of them were better leaders than others, but certainly none of them were any less interesting.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I do. This recipe I learned from one of my brothers about 20 years ago when I was helping him. He does mechanical work, installation, and I was helping him out, and we were running some stuff in a wall, some pipe, and this pipe was going to be covered up by sheetrock, and nobody was ever going to see it again. And so I wasn't too careful, and it was kind of all over the place, but I got from A to B, and I thought, you know, it'll get covered up, it'll work just fine, nobody will know. My brother came up to me and said, you have to do that again. That's not good. And I said, it's going to work just fine. He said, yeah, but it's not good quality work. And I said, but it's going to get covered up. And he said, if you take time to do quality work where people can't see it, you will never have to worry about quality work where it's visible. And that's really impacted me. And I've carried that with me over the past couple decades. There's a lot of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just worried about where people will be able to see it. Our slack in life,
right?
You know, our private lives. In terms of the presidency, you could say, well, you know, does a private life, you know, is it any of our business? You know, that's always been an argument. You know, especially with Clinton and others.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Newt Gingrich had a lot of that in his
right.
thing. And in my mind, you know, if you're not cautious in private, you're not going to be that cautious in public either. You know, it's who you are, it's your person, and it really does make a big difference in my book.
That's character building.
It is. It is. I mean, is a person's private life really our business? No. But you take somebody who's in the spotlight, like a president of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and, for example, somebody who cheats on his wife.
Right.
I mean, if you're married and you have an affair,
right.
That's pretty serious in my book, because mm-hmm. if you can lie to your partner in life, the person that you swore to protect, you know, through thick
mm-hmm.
and thin,
right.
how easily will you lie to a stranger or to
mm-hmm.
the American public? You know,
mm-hmm.
it is character. It is important. It is... It is part of their persona.
Right. And like I mentioned to you earlier, as a person, sure, I respect you, and because that's between you, your loved one, and God. However, the presidency of the United States, that office, that Oval Office, requires a certain amount of standards.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to rise up to that challenge to meet that. And not everybody has the ability to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree very much. The presidency is not a position of one person.
Right.
One person is delegated to represent the entire American population.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not living up to the standards, you know, it reflects on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The
very
world
true.
Watches. The
That's
world
correct.
Watches.
That's correct. Well, DJ, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Paul Helgich. He is the co-founder of Best Corporation, a pioneering organic food company. Paul and I will be discussing about his latest book titled Stress Pandemic, 9 Natural Steps to Survive, Master Stress, and Live Well. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. DJ, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.